Welcome to The Power of Stories, a podcast by women, about women, and for women. Their voices and their stories. I am Sharon Catherine D'Agostino, a passionate advocate for the empowerment of women and girls everywhere, and the founder of sayitforward.org.
And I'm Yodit Kifle-Smith, a creative dedicated to making sure the voices and stories of women are heard. I have the privilege of working with Sharon on sayitforward.org to do just that. In this podcast, you will meet courageous women from around the world whose unique path to empowerment will leave you encouraged and inspired.
We're very excited today to be talking with Andrea Jordan. Andrea is a midwife, a mother of two, a wife, and a believer in the power of women and the empowerment of women. We met Andrea at the International Confederation of Midwives Congress in 2017 in Toronto, and she inspired us. So we're thrilled to have her with us here today. Welcome, Andrea.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you, Sharon. Thank you, Odette. It's wonderful to be here.
I have heard you say that the most challenging experiences are the richest. And that is quite true, I believe, for many of us. Would you share one of your challenging experiences and how it enriched your life?
I decided to move from Barbados, where I was living and working as a midwife, back to the UK, and to move my family, but I was going to go ahead of my family. And when I left Barbados in February, it was, of course, like 2 weeks or 3 weeks just ahead of like full lockdown worldwide, you know. So I left my two little ones and my husband in Barbados to come to England to kind of find, you know, myself, find work, find somewhere for us to live together. But then lockdown happened and I had 6 months basically of separation from my family and no way of knowing when we'd be reunited. That really kind of reminded me of, again, when we spoke in Toronto about like just how important it is to not get lost in the situation that you're in, not to kind of forget that there's always a meaning, there's always a reason, there's always some guidance there for you to get through. So in that separation time, it was 6 months of not knowing because flights weren't running yet and, you know, Virgin weren't answering, you know, in terms of when flights would be restored and all sorts. And I could have gotten deep into a depression or into a panic about, you know, when I'd be separated and if we'd ever be reunited again and all that. And I kind of got onto the verge of it, you know, and then remembered, as we do as people, especially as women, the things that we go through and the lessons therein. And I kind of dug deep, kind of remembered to anchor myself in, okay, why is all of this happening and what do I need to do in this time? And I think a lot of people did the same. I focus in on self. Make sure I started to do things to kind of create a really healthy body because I'd got myself a bit run down in Barbados. Instead of pining for my children, which of course is like heart-wrenching, and started writing in my journal again, which I stopped doing. And a lot of women do this. We focus in on the reflection that the journal gives us, that we can reflect constantly on what we're thinking, what we're doing, what we need to do, how we need to get there. I changed my diet completely and started doing intermittent fasting and all sorts of things. And it really helped with my health. And it taught me, wow, you go through these things and there are specific lessons for you in the journey of what you're going through. And the more difficult it is, I mean, that was probably one of the most difficult things I've ever been through, being separated from my family like that. I mean, but, you know, these are the times that lots of people have been going through lots of real, real heavy things, right? So no matter how hard it is, you can find your gem, you can find your lesson, you can find your connection to kind of bringing yourself a little higher, your vibration a little higher, your understanding a little higher in the depths of that. And that's what it's there for. So that's, you know, that's my very recent reminder of how the difficult times are there for us to kind of grow and understand. And
being separated from one's children is an extreme situation. Tell us how you dealt specifically with that.
I mean, if I think about it now, I'll start crying. It was so emotional. The worst thing about it was not knowing, because in the middle of that March, April time pandemic, everything was out. Everything was out the window. Everything was up in the air. No one knew what was going to happen. And I kept thinking, I'm never going to see my family again. It was awful. It was really, really bad. But so my best friends, you know, and family members, they're the ones who keep us afloat a lot of the time. So it was my connections with those who are close to me and my connection to, dare I say it, the ancestors. But it is the ancestors, because I was having some amazing dreams in that time. And they were very specific dreams that were showing me very clearly how I needed to move forward and what I needed to focus on. If I focus on crying every day and missing my children and panicking about when I'm going to see them again, I'm going to miss the lessons and I'm going to miss the direction that I should be taking. I'm going to be wasting my energy, basically. And so those are things that really kind of got me through. The family connections helping me, my best friends, and the spiritual side of things.
Tell us what inspired you to become a midwife.
Well, my mother, who died when I was 4 and a half, she was a midwife. And I always heard my family talking about her and how she kind of pushed herself. You know, she was very directed in terms of wanting to achieve things. I think she was the youngest matron, Black midwife. In the UK.
What is a matron?
A matron is like somebody who's like in charge of the ward. That would have been in the 60s and 70s, where you didn't really get that people reach those kind of positions that easily. So, I mean, of course, when I went into midwifery, I just had a passion for babies and pregnant women. I just loved seeing bellies and I was kind of just fascinated with process of how this baby develops in the womb and then it gets out of there and then it looks like, you know, massive, and you can't imagine how it gets out of that such a small space. And, you know, so I was always fascinated by the process of reproduction, pregnancy and birth. But I didn't realize, it's only in my later years as a midwife that I'm kind of just completely blown away with the whole process even more. I think the more you know about anything, the more you realize you don't know. So the more I know about midwifery, because I've been a midwife for 21 years now, the more I realize that I don't know. And it's just absolutely amazing. And then it gives me this huge, bigger respect for women.
Have you been in situations where that power of women have been questioned? And how have you responded in moments like that?
The honest truth of it is that you have that all the time as a midwife, because in midwifery, women constantly have to fight against what is patriarchy, I suppose. Patriarchy is steep in is deep in obstetrics, and in some cases in midwifery, but not true midwifery. True midwifery is like, you know, for women, right? And it's woman centered, and it's empowering for women. But in some cases, there are things that are done to women in midwifery and in obstetrics particularly that is undermining of women's power, that constantly reinforces that women can't get this done, they can't do that, they need this help, they need that to be done. You know, for example, a woman having a home birth, you know, in Barbados, where I worked for 14 years, the powers that be, the government, was still kind of very anti women making that choice, because they thought all women should have their baby in a facility because it's safer. But, you know, you can't really dictate to a woman where she should, you know, have her baby. It's her human right to decide where she'll have her baby. Or like eating in labor, for example, you know, women need strength to be able to get through what may be a very long labor and push their baby out. And in many countries around the world, they still restrict women from eating in labor. So she's weakened. And that comes from this patriarchal view of basically seeing birth as a medical event almost, or a medical procedure, rather than just a natural process that the woman's body goes through when she is bringing forth a new person for the planet, right? It's all medicalized. And so you have to restrict food, and she has to have an IV and all of that. So there's a lot of things that we see in midwifery in my work that constantly undermines the woman's ability and her right and her desires or needs and her power to choose.
So how did you learn to fight for your way? Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. You know, it's probably come from having a past, you know, in my past as a child, I was the victim of, or whatever you want to say, you know, abuse. So my mum died when I was very young. As I said, I was 4.5. So my family tried to raise me the best way they can, but there was sexual abuse I was exposed to. And then maybe because of my mum dying very young as well, and my dad not kind of raising me, I wasn't raised by him specifically. And he wasn't the sexual abuser, I would say. So there was all this kind of trauma and pain and all these things that I was almost marinated in from young. But something inside of me when I was growing up told me that I needed to kind of heal a lot of that so that I could be useful in society. And so I went to see a counselor at the age of, I think I was, when I first saw a counselor or a therapist, I was about 17 or 18. And it was because I got into a relationship that was violent. And I knew, I deep down, I absolutely knew that this is not my destiny. I'm not supposed to be in a relationship where I fear for my life and I've got somebody who controls everything and I can't speak for fear of being beaten or whatever. I knew at that teen years, you know, 17, 16, that could not be my destiny. So I started seeing a therapist and started to understand, okay, this is like a huge rabbit hole now that I started doing therapy of healing, self-healing.
It takes a lot of courage to speak about being a survivor of sexual violence. Do you encourage survivors to share their stories and their experiences, or do you think that it's an individual choice?
Oh, yeah, it's an individual choice because not everyone feels comfortable to do it, and not everyone feels like anyone needs to know. You know, I know that me having gone through that as an 8-year-old child I have now used it to empower me to be more sensitive to the experience that people, and it's like 1 in 3, is it 1 in 3 or 1 in 2, 1 in 4, I don't know, it's a higher number of human beings experience that. I say human beings is obviously not just females, and it's getting worse. So for me, I have used it to kind of create more power for myself and for my children, but it's not the same for everyone. And I think it's a journey because in the beginning, I wouldn't have said much about it to people. And now I'm quite open about it because I think I've reached a point where it doesn't define me in the negative way. I don't feel, I feel like I can use it in a positive way to define, not define, but to explain where I come from.
As a survivor of sexual abuse when you were 8, do you have advice for a parent who learns that her child or his child has survived sexual assault?
My advice would be to always receive the information. Do you know what I mean? Just receive it. Receive it openly and with as much love as possible. Because once you are some way and somehow denying of a child telling you that that is what they experienced or that's what's happened, you're negating that child's experience, and it's a very painful experience, and it does so much damage. Children look to adults to protect and to help them to understand the world. And so if they're coming to you with that information and it's too painful for you to receive and you push it away or you push them away, that is almost as bad as the abuse. I'm sorry, it's very difficult for them. So that's one of the first things, receive it with as much love towards that child as possible. And secondly, I expect asking as much as you can, getting them to tell you as much as they can, especially if it's ongoing. that needs to be taken forward. Sorry, because it's a crime. So that it has to be investigated in a proper way. If it's something that happened a long time ago and you can't really do that as much about it in those terms, you still do what you can for that person telling you and then supporting them in whatever way they want supporting. If it's to do therapy, if it's to talk about it, if it's to approach the person who was the abuser, whatever, just be there.
How can we all encourage other women and girls to confidently use their voice and claim their power?
It's all about us as individuals, as well as us as females, because we realize that all around the world, the feminine has been oppressed. And now we're seeing the changes worldwide. But those changes aren't going to come about just by women. It's each and every person. It's all of us, whether they're male or female, expecting and respecting and uplifting and doing all the right things towards creating the space where women and girls can recognize their power and not feel like they need to dumb themselves down or numb themselves off.
This conversation has been such a gift, and we just want to thank you for making the time to talk with us today and share your story. And to our listeners, thank you for making the time to listen to this episode of the Power of Stories podcast.
Andrea, it was so beautiful talking with you. I feel that there's such an opportunity for women to connect through love and empowerment. So thank you. Always a joy talking with you, Yodit. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you so much, too. All the best to you both.
And to our listeners, we invite you to visit sayitforward.org, a place where you are welcome to share one or more stories about your unique path to empowerment. Or you can read the stories of other women and girls. This is Sharon Catherine D'Agostino
and Yodit Kifle-Smith signing off for now and hoping you'll join us for our next episode of the Power of Stories podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, we do hope you'll give us a review and recommend the Power of Stories to a friend. And lastly, we want to remind you of the power of your stories.